a human being is confusing. We are capable of great things and, you know, incredible feats and loving sacrifice, and we're also profoundly broken. And then it's like you throw other people in the mix, and it's really even more confusing. Things get dicey. I'm trying to figure out my life, and you're trying to figure out yours, and we're in proximity to one another, some sort of relationship. We're working on a project together. We share genetics. So what are the rules of our interactions? Who's responsible for what? How come I can't control you? How come I keep doing things that I don't really want to be doing? So it's like, you know, we're asking these types of questions and we're navigating here, and so we find a need for boundaries. So today, we're going to do a broad overview of what are boundaries, why do we need them, what are the rules as we consider implementing them. So it's what we're going to be looking at is based pretty much solely on this book. So if you want to leave and just go buy a copy of this book, you can. That's fine. It's literally taken straight from Cloud and Townsend's oft-updated boundaries. So what's cool is what we're going to discover this morning is that a lot of these ideas are rooted in and supported by the Bible itself. Although it's not like these are strictly Christian ideas or something like that. These are concepts that apply and could benefit any human being anywhere. So, what are boundaries? What does a boundary look like? The analogy laid out in the book, which is great, to help us understand the concept of boundaries, is that it's like a property line. So a property line, right, you've got a farm, and you need to figure out what delineates my land versus your land, right? What is me and what is not me? Or when you buy a house, right, you get a deed, and it's like, okay, here's this invisible line of your responsibility. So anything inside this is yours, outside is not, right? Knowing what I am to own and take responsibility for gives me freedom. So I can do what I want in my yard, right? I can put in a pool, or I can dig up all the grass and just have a giant mud pit. I can't go into your yard and dig up all your grass, right? That you're going to call the police. So it's important that we understand, what am I responsible for? What's in my yard? What am I not responsible for? So first, we've got to understand the difference in being responsible to someone versus being responsible for someone. Paul lays out in Galatians 6 that we are to carry each other's burdens. And in this way, you fulfill the law of Christ. For each one should carry their own load. So we've got a difference here. Sometimes we've got burdens, and sometimes we've got loads. What's the difference? Okay, so a burden is like a boulder. It's too heavy for one person to carry, right? Like if you had like an 80-pound rock, I mean, you could like carry it around all day, but that would be really inconvenient. It would be much easier if you like call your friend and, hey, can you help me move this rock? A daily load, that's just your backpack, right? You don't want two people inside the same backpack. That's really inconvenient and inappropriate, right? That's made for one person. Like, oh, maybe I can lug this like 15-pounder around. So that's the difference here. So we are responsible to help other people carry burdens, things in their lives that are too heavy. But we are responsible for our own loads, our own daily responsibilities, right? Like getting up and maintaining your job and feeding yourself. And, you know, those are your daily responsibilities. Now, problems arise when people act as if their boulders are daily loads and refuse to help. Or as if their daily loads are boulders they shouldn't have to carry. Then things get really confusing. So what's the goal of boundaries? Okay, the goal of boundaries is to let in the good and keep out the bad. That's what we're working towards here. So think of a boundary line. If it's invisible, how are you going to know where the line is? Well, you put a fence up, right? That's what people do. You drive out into the country, and it's like you got fences everywhere and signs and keep off, private property. But there's a fence there, right, to delineate my land versus your land. But if we want to interact with our neighbors or the people around us, then our fences need gates in them, right, to let in and out yourself and other people. So, for example, if I'm in pain, I'm grieving, I'm having a hard time, it would be really helpful if I chose to open up and talk about what's going on, talk about this pain inside, release it, find healing, let other people in. So, we need gates. Boundaries are not walls. We don't want to live in a state of deprivation from other people. We need fences and we need gates to be able to let in support and healing. What's cool in the text, Cloud and Townsend make this great case that boundaries are built right into the very nature of God. So if you think about it, in the Bible, we believe that we have his inspired words, right? That he has communicated to us what he thinks, what he feels, his plans, what he likes, what he doesn't like, what he's okay with, what he's not okay with. These are his boundaries. This is what I will allow. This is what I will not allow in my yard, right? Think about the covenants that he makes in the Old Testament. Think about the theology of heaven and hell. What is that? Those are God's boundaries. And so we can emulate him. We can pull right from the biblical text. So, what are our most basic form of boundaries? How do we differentiate ourselves from somebody else? Obviously, you got your skin, right? That's like the most obvious dividing line in terms of what is me, what is not me. You can touch me. So it protects our body, right? It keeps my blood inside, protects my bones, and ideally expels the bad, right? That's my skin as a boundary. Words are boundaries. The most basic boundary-setting word is no. Your words also define your property line for others as you communicate your feelings, your intentions, your dislikes. So we communicate. These are my limits. These are my thoughts. These are my edges, right? We've got to speak them so people know this is where you stand. Geographical distance. This is a boundary, a physical boundary. And it can be useful. Sometimes we need to replenish ourselves, right? We need to withdraw. We need to get away, sometimes from danger. We need to put a limit on our exposure to this dangerous thing. And so geographical distance is really helpful. Think about somebody that is being abused physically, sexually, verbally. Getting some distance, some literal physical distance there is going to keep out the bad. Time, another spatial boundary. Sometimes we've got to take some time off from a person or from a project in order to regain ownership, to regain a sense of control. I need a little time. I need a little space here. Emotional distance. This can be a boundary. Now, ideally, this is not a permanent boundary, but sometimes we do need emotional distance as a temporary boundary from certain people in certain situations. And you're like, that's not loving, like just to withdraw from people. Hear me out. Jesus did it. Jesus did it. Think about the account where Jesus goes in and he clears the temple, right? And he's like, you turned my father's house into a market. And then he follows up and he says that it says Jesus would not entrust himself to them. because he knew all people. He emotionally withdrew from them. I don't trust you. So there are times where it makes sense, again, to emotionally withdraw, to be careful. You know, again, in a case of abuse or someone has a substance abuse problem, hey, I'm going to withdraw here until I see some signs of change and progress, and then we can reevaluate this boundary. Other people. Sometimes we need other people to help us figure out our boundaries. So creating boundaries often involves a sort of support network of people around us. Sometimes it's like, okay, I need to keep this certain person or this type of behavior out. But I need to be able to consciously let in good and helpful and loving people so that I can find support to be able to maintain this hard line with the bad. And I wonder how many of us have been profoundly confused about this concept, been aversive even toward boundaries because of what we were taught by our families, maybe, or even in, you know, former spiritual communities, that boundaries are selfish, boundaries are mean, boundaries are unbiblical. But how are we going to find the strength to set limits unless we've been able to form healthy, supportive relationships where we can glean love that respects our boundaries? So we need other people to figure out this line. Consequences. If you trespass on somebody else's property, there's a consequence, right? Again, drive out into the country, look at the signs, private property. And so we can follow God's example here to back up our boundaries with consequences. In fact, a boundary without a consequence, that's not really a boundary at all. So consequences, they let people know the seriousness of the trespass and the seriousness of our respect for ourselves. This teaches them that our commitment to living according to helpful values is something we hold dear, something that we'll fight to protect and guard. So, these are our boundary lines. So we've got to figure out then, okay, if these are how we sort of mark out what makes me different from someone else, what is me? Like, what is it that I'm responsible for? What's in my yard? So, we've got to answer this question. What falls within our boundaries? But I thought maybe first we could discuss a bit, feeling bold. How could knowing what you are to own, that quote from earlier, knowing what you are to own and take responsibility for, give you freedom? So, what are my responsibilities? Feelings. Yes, love it, correct. We are responsible to be aware of our feelings, to acknowledge our feelings. This is how I feel. They don't need to dictate our lives, okay? But they shouldn't be ignored. And we're responsible to keep tabs. No one else can tell me what to feel. No one else is responsible for my feelings. Correct. Attitudes and beliefs. Attitudes have to do with our orientation towards something. Beliefs are anything that we accept as true. If we don't question our attitudes, if we don't own our beliefs and our attitudes, then what happens is we will simply assimilate and absorb the attitudes around us, in our family, in our culture. That's just the way that we work. So we are responsible to keep tabs here in these areas. And some of us learn, you know, attitudes and beliefs very early on in life. Still, as an adult, you are responsible for those things. We're responsible for our behavior. We are each responsible for what we do, for how we act, right? And ideally, we learn this lesson at a very young age, that my choices, my actions have consequences, right? That's like sort of the whole point of parenting. I'm trying to teach my child this thing. And so, in an ideal world, we parent with love and limits. with warmth and consequences, because it produces confident children who have a sense of control over their lives. I know what I can do. I know what my responsibilities are. I know that this was my fault, and I can own that, et cetera, right? That's part of our goal. Similarly, we're responsible for our choices. We need to realize that we're in control of our choices, no matter how we feel. So, I love there's this part in Joshua where God is addressing the nation of Israel. And he says, look, if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then you choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. You get to choose. God has given us the freedom to make choices in our lives, and we are responsible for the choices that we make, which is so great. It's such a blessing. Oof. And a doozy of a responsibility. We're responsible for our values. What is it that I love? What do I assign importance to? Our hearts are capable of valuing things that don't satisfy us. But we're responsible to keep tabs here. What is it that I value? Limits. This is the component that we most often hear about when we talk about boundaries. In reality, setting limits on others is a misnomer. We can't do that. What we can do is set limits on our own exposure to people who are behaving poorly. We can't change them or make them behave right. But I can work on me. We also need to set internal limits. We need to have spaces inside ourselves where we can have a feeling, an impulse, a desire, without acting it out. We need to be able to say no to ourselves. I was helping my son. He's 5. He's trying to shower on his own. It's a disaster. He's got to be supervised. Obviously, I can't get in there, so I'm just waiting around, trying to keep him on tap. I mean, it's just he's doing everything wrong, not cleaning anything. And I'm just standing there, and I just had this vision of me just putting my foot through the wall. I'm so annoyed. But I didn't put my foot through the wall because I can say no to myself. I can have a thought and not act it out, okay? That's an example from 2 days ago. Our resources, our gifts, what is it that you've been given, right? Think of the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Our talents, our resources, the gifts that we've been given are clearly our responsibility. They're clearly within our boundaries. Our thoughts. We've got to be intentional about checking our thinking. Where could I be wrong? What are the areas that I could use a little development in? Which thoughts are mine to begin with? And which thoughts have I just sort of stolen from somebody else? These thoughts just belong to other people. I'm responsible to keep tabs of these things. Our desires, our wants, our dreams, our goals, our hungers. Can you identify what drives you, what you really want? What are you going to do to pursue your desires? You're in charge of that. We often do not actively seek our desires from God, and those desires are mixed up with things that we don't really need, but we're responsible to sort through this stuff. Which ones are good? Which ones are helpful? Which ones aren't? Where can I adjust here? Where could I submit to God's perspective? And finally, love. Who we love. What we give our love to. The inflow, yes, and the outflow. So these are our responsibilities in life, in relationships. The reality is we cannot control other people. I can't tell you who to love. I can't tell you what to think. I can't make you do anything. And tromping into somebody else's yard, trying to force our perspective on these things is going to cause problems for us and in our relationships. So will assuming that somebody else is responsible for these things in our own lives. Our choices, our attitudes, etc. These are ours alone. But so we can't control other people, but there is a category for influencing other people, right? We can communicate, we can dialogue. So I thought maybe we could talk about what's the difference here. One of these things, no, but one, yes? What do you think? What's the line between influence and control? Yeah, laying out some of these, like there's a difference here, and here's your responsibility, and here's my choice, and et cetera. Yes, okay. So in order to orient ourselves in reality, we need to sort of explore some of the principles that govern relationships, that govern well-being, that we can observe in the world. Some of us, especially, were raised in maybe dysfunctional families or boundaryless families. And so these concepts are very confusing. So are there rules? Are there, reality checks that we can sort of absorb and live in to help us navigate this? Some are intuitive and some are, biblical. So the book lays out 10. Sorry. Kind of a lot, but to help us conceptualize what are our responsibilities here. Reality check one, cause and effect. Sowing and reaping, right? Whatever a person sows, this he will also reap, says Paul in Galatians 6. Our choices matter. Our choices carry consequences, sometimes positive consequences, sometimes negative consequences. This isn't like a threat from on high, but this is a helpful insight into reality. Causes have effects, right? Smoking damages your lungs. That's not a mean thing to say. That's reality. Brushing your teeth decreases the likelihood of cavities. Fact. So, understanding some of this stuff, we've got to reckon with reality here. But we run into problems. People can interfere with the law of cause and effect by stepping in and rescuing irresponsible people. Rescuing a person from natural consequences of his behavior enables him to continue in irresponsible behavior. So we get in the way. We risk people not learning this reality if we're constantly interfering. That dang giving tree. This book always sort of bothered me, right? Because it's like, here's this tree and the boy and they play and there's apples and they're playing hide and seek and they're up on the hill. And then the boy grows older and he's like, I need to make some money. Give me your apples. Okay. He gets older. I need a house. Give me your branches. Okay. And he's like, I need a boat to get out of here. Give me your trunk. And the tree does. Every step of the way. He's the giving tree, right? Or he's the boundaryless tree. My take. I don't know. But a person who regularly rescues another person, we have a label for that. This is the codependent tree. I can't help myself. I got to step in. I don't want you to experience this pain. I don't want you to hurt. I don't want you to experience this consequence. But not allowing the other person to experience, again, natural consequences, how is that helping them? How can they understand the power of their choices and their behavior? Do you need to stop interrupting the law of sowing and reaping of cause and effect in somebody else's life? It's worth considering. So, for example, say you've got a sister and she's like chronically overspending, right? And you're always there to lend her money when she's overdrawn her account or her credit card bill is due. But how is she ever going to learn that her approach to spending isn't working? Because you are always there to protect her from the consequences, from being sent to collections, or from having to apply for food stamps, or whatever it is, you are interfering. And instead of her suffering the consequences of her choices, you're suffering the consequences of her choices, yeah? So, boundaries are helpful so that her problems cause problems for her, not for you. And you're like, pretty selfish. Jeez. You're not going to help your sister when she's in need? It like, aren't we supposed to be loving other people? You're not going to help her? Okay, hold on. So we've got to understand the concept of responsibility here. We are responsible to one another, like we talked about earlier. We are not responsible for one another. Galatians 5, rather use your freedom to serve one another in love. That's how freedom grows. For everyone, everything we know about God's word is summed up in a single sentence. Love others as you love yourself. This is an act of true freedom. So I am responsible to love you, but I'm not responsible for you. The exception here, obviously, is your own minor children. You are responsible for them. But the goal is one day they understand these principles so that by the time they're 18, you can release them into the world and they understand what they're responsible for and they understand these rules, ideally even before that, right? Like in their teenage years. But when they're young, yeah, you're responsible for them. But I can't think for you. I can't change you. I can't make you feel anything. You're responsible for you. I'm responsible for me. And so sometimes loving other people means giving, and sometimes it means setting limits, right? Again, think about our children. In parenting, we want to give them affection, we want to give them attention, but we also want to set limits on things, right? Like screen time. If you have children, you know that if you don't set limits on screen time, they turn into the worst possible versions of themselves. Like an actual gremlin. So it's helpful to be able to do both. I can give and I can set limits. Both are loving. The law of power, reality check, right? This is something that is talked about a lot in a 12-step program, if you've ever been involved in 12-step programs. What areas do human beings have power in and of themselves? Where do we lack power? We have the power to admit our problems. We have the power to ask for help. We have the power to turn from darkness that we discover within ourselves, right? This is the biblical concept of repentance. We have the power to go and make amends, or at least offer amend, relational amends, if that is needed. But there are many things that, frankly, we have no power over. And that's why the Serenity Prayer is pretty cool. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yeah, that's a great prayer. That's really, really helpful. I don't have the power to change other people. Sometimes, like we talked about earlier, we can influence other people, and they can make a choice to change. But what I can do, I can change me. I can limit destructive patterns in other people so that those patterns don't work on me anymore. And then maybe that will influence someone, yeah, to make a different choice and to change. But I only have the power to change me. So you might be thinking, okay, but if I set this limit or if I do this thing, if I draw this line with my husband, with my wife, with my kid, you don't understand. Like, they're going to be so mad. Like, I'm going to really catch a lot of heat for this. So we get afraid to set boundaries, right? So we just comply. I can take it. I can absorb it. It's not that big a deal. So we just keep going. And yet there's this sense of like resentment and irritation. My hand is being forced here. And so we get into these cycles and these patterns where it's like, that's not really loving. That's not freedom. So what do we do? We need to understand the reality of respect. We need to respect other people's boundaries and treat them the way that we want our boundaries treated, right? This is the golden rule. Our real concern with others should not be, are they doing what I would do or what I want them to do, but are they really making a free choice? When we accept others' freedom, we don't get angry or feel guilty or withdraw our love when they set boundaries with us. I can say no, and you can say no too. And I can respect that, ideally. For example, say your brother tells you, hey, my family's not coming to Thanksgiving this year. You can push back. What? How dare you? You can demean his wife, who you suspect is behind all of this. You can tell him he's ruining the holiday, and this is going to be the worst Thanksgiving. You can whine, you can moan, all those things, right? Sure, that's one option. Okay. Or you can say, man, I'm really bummed to hear that, but I respect your decision. I would love to see you guys at Christmas or maybe next year. Own your disappointment and respect your brother's choice here. Motivation. It matters whether our choices, our efforts, our sacrifices are motivated by love. This is so important. Or fear. Am I saying yes to this person because I love them or because I'm afraid that they're going to abandon me if I don't? I'm afraid that if I don't do this thing that I don't really want to do, they're not going to love me anymore. Am I doing this, am I making this choice because I'm free to, or because I'm afraid this person is going to be mad at me if I don't do this thing? Am I afraid of feeling guilty? Well, I can't say no because I'll feel really bad. Am I making this choice because I want to, or because there's my mom's voice in the back of my mind saying, you owe me. How dare you? Am I doing this because I want to, or because I just want to make this other person happy? Is making this other person happy the same as loving them? I want to say no to this person, but I don't want them to be sad, so I'll just comply. Our motivation matters. And so the goal here with motivation is freedom. We're free to make this choice. 2 Corinthians 9:7. Paul says, each of you should give what you've decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. It's so helpful. And you're like, Abby, if I just did what I wanted, someone could get hurt. Someone might not like that. Uh-huh. Yeah. And you're like, well, I don't want to be cruel. I don't want to hurt people. Okay. So, what are you going to do? Great question. And so here we've got to understand the concept of evaluation. We have to consider. What's the effect of this choice going to be? If I draw this line, if I set this boundary, what's going to happen? Boundary setting can be difficult. It can be confusing. It could hurt people. Yeah, people could not like your boundary, for sure. So you got to think about that. You got to weigh that out. And is someone feeling hurt the same as someone being harmed? Or are those different things? It's worth considering. What's the weight of this choice? Sometimes you're going to get a lot of pushback. People don't like our choices. People don't like our boundaries. So if you need to confront someone, say, yeah, people don't like being confronted. Sure, they might feel some pain there. So we are responsible to evaluate, am I going to do the right thing or the thing that feels right? Someone wise said this to me, rerouted my life. We are responsible to do the right thing, not necessarily the thing that feels right. I found out later it's actually a quote from 30 Rock. What? There's Liz Lemon. Sometimes the right thing and the hard thing are the same thing. I read that on a tea bag. Anyway, still a great point. It's true. It feels bad to take a hard line with people, to let them know, hey, I disagree with this choice that you're making. You're making a choice that excludes me from your life. You are making a choice that may mean the end of our relationship. Sometimes there are these deal breaker moments that we come to with other people. And you have to decide if your boundary is worth it. Can you hold this line? if it means the end of your relationship? What's it going to cost you to set this boundary? And are you prepared to carry that weight? Because you don't want to lay out a boundary and then not follow through. That is problematic. If you can't follow through, don't set the boundary to begin with. That's just super confusing. But it is worth asking, why can't you follow through? What's going on here? We want to be proactive people, not merely reactive people. Proactivity. We want to be known by and have the freedom to choose what we stand for. What am I going to be proactive about? What is it that I love? What do I want? The reactive person is merely reacting against, this is what I hate. This is what I don't like. This is what I'm not going to do. And we should identify those feelings. That's helpful, right? It's helpful to be able to identify, I don't like this. I don't want this. I need to own that. But you don't want to live there. Reactivity is a stage. It's not an identity. Here's all the things that I hate. We want to be proactive people. Okay, I get that you don't like this thing, but what are you doing? What do you like? What are you going to be proactive about? What are you going to stand for? Envy. Well, that's not a Christian virtue. Hold on. Envy can be helpful, especially when it comes to the upkeep of our own yards. All of us experience envy. That's just reality, right? We have things. We look at somebody else's life. I feel this sense of dissatisfaction about my own life. Now, obviously, it's okay to want things that we don't have, right? Like, and set goals and things like that. The problem is when we focus on somebody else's life and all that they've accomplished or they have, and then I neglect my own responsibilities because I'm just stuck in the land of envy. So, when we look around, and rather than taking responsibility for the lack in my own life and doing something about it, I just sort of feel envious and increasingly empty as I compare myself. Okay, but here's the thing. Envy can be used as a sort of warning light, right? I'm feeling envious of this person. Let me hit pause here. What's going on? Let me do a little self-reflection, a little question asking, maybe a little praying. God, help me understand. Why do I feel this resentment? Why don't I have the thing that I'm envying? What is it that I truly desire here? So imagine there's a guy, and he looks around at his friends, and they all seem close, and they have close relationships, and he's envious of their close relationships. Option one, stay envious, stay isolated, that your friends have friends. Option two, ask some questions. Why don't I feel close to people? Why do I withdraw from people? Maybe I should talk to a counselor. Great, that's really helpful, good. Or you got a gal, she's a stay-at-home mom, right? And she feels resentful and stuck. She envies her mom friends. She looks around, she's like, they've got more freedom than me. Here I am stuck. Option one, she can come up with a bunch of excuses for why her life is harder than the lives of her other stay-at-home mom friends. She can build that resentment in her heart about her life, resentment towards her children. You trapped me. Or she can ask some questions. What is it that I'm envying here? Am I reluctant to pursue my own interests? Why do I feel selfish when I'm doing things that I enjoy? What am I afraid of? Okay. So some of us have boundary issues because we're jealous of somebody else's yard, right? And then we just don't take care of our own. Some of us are always tromping off into other people's yards, giving unsolicited lawn input or whatever. And some of us are forever letting riffraff into our yards. We don't have any fences. We don't have any gates. So, the concept of activity. Some of us struggle with being initiative. We struggle with propulsion, forward movement. But reality check, success in life is often driven by activity and assertiveness. Sometimes it's the luck of the draw, right? And so, you know, you were born into a family that's in the top 1%. Yes, that happens, sure. But most of the time, it's success is backed by activity and assertiveness. Again, think about the parable that Jesus tells in Matthew 25. Here's this rich guy, I'm going on a trip, he calls three employees in, here's some money, I'll come check on you later. Two out of three, invest that money, make back double what he gave them, great. He shows back up, great job guys, so proud of you, you're the best. And then the third guy, he's like, I buried your money in the ground, here's your money, but I didn't lose any money, I just buried it in the ground. And the owner is like, you're fired, get out. That is not, what? That's not right. So passivity, it's not like passivity is always evil or something like that, but there are certainly times when it's not helpful, and God can't work with our inactivity. So in the example, you know, in the parable, what God rebukes is not trying and failing, but the servant who failed to try. So, activity. No one is responsible for the work in my life, not even God. You get to choose. You get to choose what you're going to be active about, what you're going to do. And no one can set boundaries for us. We've got to set them up. We've got to maintain them ourselves. Last one, exposure. Boundaries define us in relation to other people. They're relational. So this concept means that our boundaries need to be visible. They need to be communicated. They need to be exposed to the world around us. It's tempting to have a secret boundary, right? Like, well, I know what my boundaries are, you know. But then I don't have to tell other people how I feel or what I want or how they affected me or something like that. We'll keep it secret. Here's the problem. If we don't express, if we don't communicate our boundaries, our relationships will suffer, because when we choose not to communicate directly, we often communicate indirectly. It just leaks out in the form of resentment, and people can tell, and manipulation. So the best and the strongest boundaries are communicated openly. So hopefully these reality checks are helpful in conceptualizing our responsibilities in our lives, in our relationships. But I am well aware this is hard. So why do you think this is? Why is it hard to accept these concepts? Where do we get into trouble here?
It's really difficult to
change those habits. That great point, man. We've got patterns. We've got relational patterns, and it's really hard to get out of these ruts. That, you know, that's how we relate. Great point. All right. So how can we identify some of our weaknesses when it comes to boundaries? So it is helpful to sort of get a bead on, like, what are potential boundary problems. We're only going to cover four. There's a lot more, I'll be honest. Read the book. All right, so first there are, let's call them compliance, right? If boundaries are meant to let in the good and keep out the bad, this is the person that is saying yes to the bad. So some of us have a really hard time saying no, or some variation of no. I disagree. I will not. I choose not to. Stop that. It hurts. It's wrong. That's bad. I don't like it when you touch me there. For some of us, it's really hard to articulate this, to say these words, and these are issues of compliance. We feel paralyzed. We feel afraid, and so it's like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. What are we afraid of? Hurting other people's feelings, abandonment, separateness, or sometimes we wish to be totally dependent on another person, a fear of someone's anger, of punishment, of being shamed, fear of being seen as bad or selfish, fear of being unspiritual, fear of your over-strict critical conscience. Matthew 9:13 says that God desires compassion, not sacrifice. In other words, God wants us to be compliant from the inside out. That's what it means to be compassionate. Not compliant on the outside, and resentful on the inside, which would be merely sacrificial. Compliance takes on too many responsibilities and set too few boundaries, not by choice, but because they're afraid. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're an avoidant. This is the person that says no to the good. This is the person that has no gates in their fences. They're not letting people in, not letting in help, not letting in support. The avoidant person withdraws when they're in need. Their boundaries become walls, and no one touches them. The avoidant person often experiences their problems and legitimate wants as something bad, destructive, or shameful. Maybe you relate more with this. Or maybe you're a controller. This is the person that has trouble respecting other people's boundaries. Some of us have a really hard time respecting the limits of other people. It's like, I can't hear a no. I can't hear no. No. Which means that they're often projecting responsibility for their lives onto other people, looking for somebody to carry their burdens and their loads. So the controller sees another person's no as a challenge, right? Yeah, I'm gonna get you to change your mind, though. Hold on. Let's keep talking about this. And so they can often be perceived as manipulative and aggressive. They neglect their responsibilities to respect other people's choices, right? Like we talked about earlier. They try to persuade people out of their boundaries. But often the controller is undisciplined in their life. They're a slave to their appetite, and that's why they have a hard time hearing no from other people. I hate that word. Or there's the non-responsive. This is the person that cannot hear the needs of other people. We are not responsible for other people, right? But we are responsible to them, to love them, to help carry their burdens. So an inability to respond to the needs of other people is a neglect of our responsibilities, right? Proverbs 3, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in your power to act. So sometimes this is the critical person, just can't hear other people's needs. And sometimes it's just the self-absorbed person. Just think about me all the time. So to sum up, boundaries help us determine how to live freely within our yards, owning our responsibilities. So our boundaries let in the good, keep out the bad, enable us to differentiate ourselves from other people, so that we're free to love. So we're responsible for navigating this, for figuring these things out. What are my tendencies here? What kind of problem, you know? All this stuff, it's a lot. It's weighty to carry. But it's reality, and it's really helpful. So the last thing we're gonna cover, we'll move quickly because you have it on a paper, is just some concepts you can put in your boundaries toolbox, let's call it. You can pull it out later. You can ask these questions as needed. So, first concept is, what would be some helpful questions to ask when you're navigating boundary setting, you're having a conflict with someone or something like that? So, first, identify, you know, what are my tendencies here? Am I the compliant, the avoidant, the controller, the non-responsive? It's good to keep a beat on that. Am I operating out of fear or am I operating out of freedom? What would a free choice look like here, right? You may not be able to control other people, but you cannot allow other people to control you. Make a free choice. What move do I need to make in order to let in the good, keep out the bad? Helpful question. What's it going to cost me? Am I prepared to carry the weight of this boundary? Am I sure that I can follow through on the consequences here? How do I feel? What do I want? What do I dislike? You know, owning and organizing, and where do I even stand on this, and asking these self-reflective questions. I feel hurt. I feel sad. I want to have agency in this relationship. I dislike when you make decisions for me, et cetera, et cetera. Who needs to take responsibility in this situation? Is it like, oh, I've been enabling my spouse? Or is it like, oh, we've both been trying to control each other? Who is it that needs to take responsibility? To whom do I need to communicate my boundary? The other party? Sure, yeah. Do I need to sort of loop in a third party support crew? Who would it be helpful to communicate this to? Then, okay, you're reflecting later, this isn't working. My boundaries are not being, I laid this out and here we are again. Okay, first, take a look at yourself. What are my actions? How am I presenting my boundaries? Am I being firm here? Check, yes, I am, okay. So sometimes you can just go directly to the other person and ask them, hey, what can we do here? How can we resolve this? Because I communicated, I laid this out, and it seems like you're having some trouble. What can we do here? And sometimes, like, that's not working either. Hey, bring in a third party. That's totally fine. Bring in a friend. Get a counselor involved. Get some fresh eyes, some new energy in this situation to help make your boundaries work.